Thank you for listening to Ivy Podcast, where we feature weekly leadership conversations with thought leaders and industry experts. Now, here is your host, Angela Alberti.
All right, Ivy Podcast listeners, thank you guys so much for tuning into another episode of the Ivy Podcast. I am your host, Angela Alberti, and if you've had any of the episodes to check out this year, then you know I have been all about the female empowerment series, particularly ones that have led the industry as it relates to the workforce ecosystem and the vastly trillion-dollar industry that this is all a part of. That is the case with today's episode. I have the chance to sit down with Erica Rooney. Rooney, I'm so excited about this. We've talked about it before, and I've had a chance to see you on LinkedIn. Can you tell the audience a little bit more about yourself, please?
Yeah, absolutely. And first of all, I am so excited to be here. I love that it is about this female empowerment and just promoting women. So it just resonates with my soul. So thank you so much for having me. But yes, so Erica Rooney, I am a chief people officer by day. I work for a mid-sized e-commerce IT company, and I'm based out of Raleigh, North Carolina. We are a remote-first company, though, so we are all over the place, but I handle all things people experience. So from the moment someone applies on our website all the way until they transition out of my company, which is called Blue Acorn ICI. And then I also have my own executive coaching and HR consulting business as well. So I do a lot of focusing on female empowerment, gender equality, and just making sure that there are more women in leadership.
Ah, that's beautiful. We're going to have a great time on today's episode, Erica, because I know that this is something that drives a passion, and I'm hopeful that the would-be future female entrepreneurs and leaders are listening into today's show. Let's dive in, though, a little bit deeper. Let's go under the covers, as they say, and get to know kind of like the timeline trajectory of what's led you into the CPO role at Blue Acorn and how that's evolved into also doing some coaching. Because I think it's pretty cool. You play a part in the onboarding and the life cycle experience for an e-commerce digital staffing company, but you also are a proponent of the contingent workforce because you do that yourself. You've got the side hustle. I mean, you're one of three Americans that do that. So can you walk us through your whole timeline and what's led you up to this point now?
So I think it's interesting because it all really connects with my why, right? Mm-hmm. So when I was in college, like I had no idea what I wanted to do. You know, I thought maybe I'd be a nurse or maybe I'd do this. And, you know, I didn't know. I knew I liked helping people. And I happened to find myself in like a community health class after I realized I did not like blood and guts. So like the nursing medical route was not for me. I've been community health. And a local gym came to our class. And they were like, we are looking for personal trainers. We want to hire someone to be a personal trainer. We will train you. You don't have to have any experience. And I was like, this sounds great to me. Like good money. I can work it around my schedule. I get to help people. Sounds fun, right? Got the job, started, and immediately fell in love with it because I was getting to connect one-on-one. And I worked in a women's center. So right smack from the beginning, I was helping women achieve their health and wellness goals. And I absolutely loved it. And it just all kind of fell into place because I ended up needing an internship to graduate. I got an internship with Verizon, which needed someone who had personal training experience.
Wow.
Boom. That just kind of connected because their head person was actually going out on maternity leave. I was a prenatal specialist. So it was just all these pieces kind of came together. And so I did my internship with Verizon and then went back to school, got my master's degree in workplace wellness because I really fell in love with helping people, even at that corporate level, health and fitness inside corporate. And I was like, that's it. I've got my dream job. I can't believe I'm going to like retire like doing this work, you know? Yep. And I had bugged my boss at the time for a job and he offered me that role of being a health and wellness coordinator in three different locations. And that's how I ended up in North Carolina. And I did that for a long time, but I am somebody that I'm always trying to look at what's next. I always want to do more. I want to learn more. I want to be more. And in that health and wellness industry, like unless you're going to go be Oprah's trainer, like you kind of hit the ceiling really quickly. And I found that I'd hit that ceiling as a new mom. Like I had to be in the office. I didn't love that. That wasn't like, it just wasn't meshing with my life anymore. So I kind of hit this fork in the road of like, what do I do? You know, where do I go from here? I love helping people, but like, I just can't keep doing this anymore. And I probably did so many different things. I went out and I got my PMP, which is a project management professional certificate. Wow. Right? Because I was an IT project manager. I don't know, you know?
And well, can we just pause? We've gone from nursing to wellness, no, to training, to corporate wellness, to a PMP in the middle of a existential career crisis.
Right. Yes. All the things. Awesome.
Yeah.
Right. I'm like ping pong and all
this. This is the same Erica Rooney. Okay. Gotcha.
Same one. It's all on the resume too. Yeah. But, and the PMP is a very valuable certificate like nowadays. So I'm like, well, cool.
Really?
I got it.
Really
I'm a project manager, but I got it, you know, but I finally kind of started looking into HR and I was like, okay, this kind of correlates. There's health and wellness, there's benefits. Like I kind of see the connection here. And I quit keeping count at 100 jobs because I'd never had to do that before. You know, like I had an internship, I got it. I had a connection, I got my first job. So I never had to apply. So I was like, holy shit, this is hard.
You know?
And I finally landed my first HR gig and it was really the best possible experience I ever could have had. I had an amazing mentor who truly taught me the ways of HR and like just put me in the situations to make me figure it out. And I was exposed to all the different areas. And I was in a call center environment, which is a very challenging environment to be in, right?
Lots of turnover,
people with real problems, right?
Yeah. Like,
with problems. Erica, do I feed my kids this week or do I keep my light bill on? You know?
Oh my gosh. Real
problems. And I got to help these people, you know, and I got to give them career paths and help them like get bigger pay and learn more and use their benefits to the best of their ability. So that whole helping people really kind of connected. And I just thrived off of that because it's my why. You know, like I didn't really know that then, and I couldn't really put the two together, but that's what it was. But then, you know, that little growth mindset on my shoulder got to come back in and be like, Erica, what else are you going to do here? Where are you going to go? Right. So from there, I just shot up the corporate ladder and I really went, you know, I went from that job to a global medical diagnostics company, worked there for a few years. And then that's when I came to Blue Acorn ICI as SVP of employee experience, all through networking, mind you, right? Like I will sit here and preach the power of networking.
Absolutely.
Until I'm blue in the face. And I've been here for 2.5 years and I'm a chief people officer and oversee all things people, which is amazing. But when you're at the C-level, nobody tells you this. When you're at the C-level, it gets very lonely. Especially when you're in HR, because you can't talk to anybody about anything, right? Mm-hmm. Like people's problems got to stay with you. Executive problems, they got to stay with you. The CEO's problems, they got to stay with you. And I just kind of felt like, okay, like this is great. I love where I'm at. I feel accomplished. Like I know I'm doing good work, but I'm missing that connection with people because I wasn't doing the one-on-ones, right? Like I talked to you about, I was helping people and they were coming to me, do I turn on my light bill or pay my kids, right? Mm-hmm. Now that I'm a chief people officer, it's about revenue. It's about EBITDA. It's about strategy. It's about keeping everyone in my company employed, right? Wow. Which is important work, but it is high level. It is not down in the weeds. And I was really missing that. And that's kind of what led me to executive coaching. And as I started going through my coaching certification and practices, I kept getting drawn back to women and helping women in corporate America, because I know what it's like to be a working mom in corporate America and trying to balance all the things. And it's hard. And it's hard being a woman in corporate America, you know? And it's just, women walk through the world so differently than men do, right? And even women of color, minorities, even more so. So it's like so important to give those people extra support where you can. And that is where I really find my passion when it comes to my executive coaching.
Wow.
So it's like a very long-winded story, but I feel like it all kind of connects.
It does. It absolutely does. From that hopeful nursing student all the way through chief people officer and executive coach, looking to break the barriers and the glass ceilings that really, as you know, affect women, women of color. I want to dive into that a little bit more. I think I got the understanding on the why and how that's driving your passion. But I'd love to just get some experience on, you know, what you've seen in the course of your career that has driven up this passion inside of you to really break the barriers and help women. I mean, are you drawing on examples that you've seen other women go through, or is there something that you've gone through yourself in that process?
Yeah. I mean, being in HR, you see a lot. And I've definitely seen the pay disparities, you know, the pay disparities in multiple companies all the way up the executive ladder, right? Because women don't necessarily know how to ask for what they deserve, you know, and they want to make it nice. And whereas men will just trailblaze on in there and ask for 50% more than they think they should get. And then they get it, you know? So I've seen the pay disparities. I've seen, and it's happened to me, where I've been the one to be asked to take the notes because I'm the female, or I've been—
Follow up with the calendar invite, will you?
Erica, follow up with that calendar invite, right? Hey, Erica, take the pictures at the company event. Why me? You know? So I have seen all of those things happen. And I know just from my own self, the just anxiety and the fear that would bubble up when I would come to these pay conversations and putting people in their place, right? Like, I remember very specifically, I applied for a job one time. This is, I think, is going to blow your mind. But I applied for a job one time. I knew I had to interview with the CEO. And in my brain, I was like, you know what? If I wear this red dress, I'm going to get more attention. I'll be more likely to get the job. And guess what? I didn't get that job, but I came in as the runner up and a surprise left winger came in and got the job. But I would have gotten that job and it would not have been because of my years of experience. You know, so like I've seen these things and I've lived these things, you know, I've been invited to the work events and the parties because I'm fun, because I'm pretty, because I'm a girl, like all this bullshit that it's not because of my brain.
Yeah.
You know, and it shouldn't be like that, but it is. And that's not going to change anytime soon.
What do you think are some of those turnkey, and this is not a magic answer overnight, I'm pushing a button, it's going to be done tomorrow. But you being at the top and really seeing this now at a strategic level across an organization, what do you think are some of those easier strides that an organization can make to break down those barriers for women and for women of color to really make up the diversity into the workforce and be behind it?
Gosh, I mean, it's add more women. Add more women, because it's all about awareness, right? And I am a true believer that most people out there are good and have good intentions, and they are not even aware of the things they are saying and the things they are doing and how they're perceived, right? So they don't even realize that they've asked you to be the cupcake bringer to the party, you know, or the calendar invite sender. But when you pull them aside and you're like, hey, you didn't know this, but, you know, there's all men, you only ask me, why is that? I can't even bake, you know, like, what is it?
And what I think part of that is really having them go through that same internalization and realizing that maybe they're not doing this directly, intentionally. It's something very deep into their core, which is to truly the essence behind inclusivity and some of these initiatives that we see taking shape. I'd love to just kind of turn the page a little bit and talk through, okay, now you are a chief people officer for a mid-sized IT e-commerce company.
Yes.
In the footing of what has been probably the most competitive landscape for talent. And when we are living and thriving off of a market that there is not simply enough supply for the demand, I want to take it and see your thoughts on what that experience has been like, especially you coming from the outside, right? Like you weren't in any form of talent delivery or optimization, always kind of because you've been in HR, but how has that experience been like for you?
Wild, right?
Absolutely, I love it.
Yeah, absolutely wild, because you're right. Like I've done recruiting before, but I was never in charge of the talent strategy for an entire organization. And so here I come into a new industry.
And isn't this on the cusp of COVID? Like
when the pandemic hits, like I started and they were like, you may or may not come into the office. We don't know. It's the pandemic. And they're like, we're going to be remote for 2 weeks. That's what everybody thought. And then we just never came back to the office. So, and we had all that. And so anything that anyone could have taught me about how the company operated, what worked in the past was all out the freaking window. You know, I mean, we were starting from the bottom of like, how can we even make this work? And it was hard. You know, we came from a time where we could keep people warm is what I'll say, right? Like interview and then reach back out to see if you're still interested. And you would be, you know, then all of a sudden we were in this market where it was like, if we didn't interview someone and get them a job offer the next day, they were gone, gone, you know? So it was just completely wild. We had to do a lot of troubleshooting, a lot of pivoting, because as you know, with that, we saw the salaries fly through the roof, because when supply and demand get all out of whack like that, they're worth more money. I mean, we had people leaving for $100,000 more a year.
Yeah.
We can't compete with that. You know, it was like, take me with you. You
know? I put in a suitcase.
So we had to get really crafty with what we did. And, you know, one of the things that we found worked really well was kind of developing our own talent, you know? So we were going out to the colleges, going out to new grads, coding schools, places like that, finding people that had little to no experience and bringing them in to kind of like this incubator program, this 4 to 6 week program where they had a mentor, trainings, they were being guided. And then we were getting them on projects and almost having them complete like free work, free or like very reduced rate work for clients so that they could get their feet wet and really kind of learn. And those programs have been extremely successful. And we did this knowing that none of these people would stay with us for a long time, right? It's got to be completely iterative, because they're going to come in, they're going to get their feet wet at a salary that's decent. And then they're going to go out, you know, while the supply and demand is crazy and find somewhere else, you know, because now they can say, I've got a year experience.
Wow.
But it's been a great strategy for us. You know, it's kept us from having to make wide changes, you know, in the organization or make cuts or anything like that. But it's also allowed us to give back to the community and bring people in, you know, because we've all seen it where they're like, we need someone with 10 years of experience on a technology that's only been around for 3.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, it's nice because we can bring them in saying it's okay that you know nothing.
Wow. And that is such a powerful tool that you can look at and really broadening what the true definitive requirements are for a role. And think about the impact that that can have on DE&I and having a more diverse workforce, knowing that your requirements, the traditional requirements, usually suitable for a certain class or population, now is expanded into this other working class. And that's the really cool thing behind it. But I want to tap into some more of the diverse strategies that you guys leveraged outside of basically creating and building your own talent pools. What were some of those other creative approaches that y'all took in the war for talent?
Yeah, so one of the things that we did, there's two things that jump out. One was cross-training. We did a ton of like, if you had any free time, you were going to go over here and learn these other skills. You know, so we were making our team members very marketable by, you know, moving them around. It's like a game of chess, right? And that's great for them because they can add all of those tools and skills to their resume. Just like I got this random PMP somewhere, you know, like that was really great. It also served as a really good retention tool because people want to learn and they want to grow. You know, they don't just want to sit there, you know, maybe for a day, but then they start to get bored. They want to learn these new technologies. So we were able to take some people and pilot with this and cross-train them when they had projects that ended. And we knew there was like a 2-week period where they weren't going to have another project start. So we would cross-train our individuals. And that was something that was really awesome and that we even need to build up more, honestly.
Yeah.
But when I think about the thing that made the biggest difference on the largest scale, it was really about our employee experience. Like we went all in on how do we make this the best experience for everybody, right? We're all remote, you know, we're all on Slack. We've got people who love it. We've got people who hate it. And, you know, we're not seeing each other. So what do we do? And we actually moved someone who was on my HR team that was in an office like assistant type role into a complete engagement specialist role. So, I mean, there's no office to manage, you know, so it was a great opportunity for her. And she organized so many fun things for our people to do. Like when we do our feedback surveys, even now, people are like, I love the culture here. Like I love how involved I feel in a company that is so remote. You know, right now we have a step challenge going on and there are, I think, 75 people in this step challenge and the smack talk is real. Like it's hysterical. And I led a company meeting the other day and I did it walking on the treadmill because I was like, I got to get these steps in, y'all.
That is awesome. That is awesome. My gosh, I would love that. So, I mean, super critical factor nowadays because we are in a remote world. And you know, somebody said in one of the earlier podcasts this year, remote work is great for productivity, but in-person working is great for strategy and team building, right? So you guys have created an essence of that because y'all were always a remote workforce, I imagine. And evolving this person's role into that engagement play has really helped formalize some of these approaches, huh?
So we actually had traditional offices in a very small, a small remote workforce, but then the pandemic hit. And when we realized we were never going to go back, and this was the wave of the future. And if we did go back, it would be like, say goodbye. You know, I just don't know how we would manage telling people they had to go back. But we really did pivot and we took that one person and unified, right? Because we had different offices that had different cultures and different experiences. And when we all went remote, it leveled the playing field.
That's awesome. Well, let's touch on that point because that was one of the areas I wanted to ask you on. I mean, we're living in a competitive landscape with talent, but we're also living in a very M&A heavy landscape. I mean, from one day to the next, we see what's happening in mergers and acquisitions and takeovers. And you have some experience that's tied to this. But when you're looking to blend or unify a culture, maybe this in this case, you know, remote work was to the advantage. But what would be some of that feedback, perhaps for other HR or talent professionals out there listening to today's episode, that helped you guys in blending a very different culturally diverse workplace into a more cohesive one?
Yeah. Well, and what's interesting too, and I think is helpful for your listeners to know, is Blue Acorn, the company that I work for, we were traditionally 4 different individual LLCs that were purchased by a private equity company and sandwiched together. That's 4 different cultures, 4 different everything. And when I tell you that these cultures are different, they could not have been more different. Like the joke was always that one office needed to loosen their tie and the other one needed to wear pants, you know,
being like night and day, right?
Night and day. So having to combine those 2 very different, cultures was wild, but the pandemic did us a favor with that. And it kind of evened the playing field because I couldn't tell who was wearing pants or not. But in all seriousness, it was a challenge. And then shortly after, so the pandemic hit in March, April, we were purchased by Infosys, which is a large global international company in October. So then we had to go through all of that as well. So, you know, there was a lot of whiplash going on. And I think the thing that kept us going was that we asked our people. So we actually did a culture survey to say, where do you feel our culture is today? And where do you want it to be? And we asked them. We didn't make an executive team decision to say, this is what we want to do. We went to our workforce and we said, we believe in people. And you guys are the heart of our organization. So what do you believe? What do you want? You know, and they wanted what they called an empowering culture. And so we then took all of our processes, all of our procedures, and we still do this today. But anytime we implement something new, we look at it from how do we empower our managers to do this or our people to do that, right? So for example, we have personal growth plans that anyone in the company can choose to involve themselves with, right? But that's up for the employee to empower themselves to say, I want to go through a personal growth plan because I want to be a director one day, you know, or I want to manage people, or I want to learn a new platform. So we empower the individual to get that on paper, get the support of their manager and their company. And then we empower the manager with different tools to support the individual, you know, so we're trying to like really kind of bring it all together.
Well, and I think it's also important to know that, you know, hearing some of the challenges that you guys have faced, but also knowing that you've been able to have this environment where you have the stakeholdership and the ability to pivot and adjust, and the leadership team behind you to give you that is so vital, right? I mean, how difficult would your role be if you were prohibited to just a certain way of doing things? Can you talk to us about what you've realized in your career and stakeholdership and leadership buy-in on some of these vastly different initiatives that you're taking across the board?
Yeah. I mean, change isn't easy, you know, not easy for anybody. Mm-hmm. And the more you could be a go with the flow kind of person, the better you're going to be, because the only thing that stays the same is change itself. Yes. Right. And if you can just look at that and remember that, it's going to make everything a lot easier, right? You could either be a gas pedal or you can be a brake pedal, right? And in the world of business, you want to be the gas. Mm-hmm. Getting stakeholders involved is so key. And I think my biggest piece of advice for that is listening to people, you know, because again, change is hard for a lot of people, right? But if you give them an ear and they can talk about their pain points and their struggles and why they're hesitant to move, they're less resistant to it.
That's very true. That is very true. Even at a leadership CEO level, I mean, it really comes down to that. Powerful.
Sometimes even more so.
Sometimes they need to be listened to and coddled a little bit more.
They know what the right answer is, you know?
That's funny. All right. So, you know, I would definitely be remiss if we didn't go through, you know, the diversity in the workplace here. And some of those initiatives and changes, I remember it being 2020 and me being at a point where I felt like my career was lost, and I'm seeing the pandemic and I'm seeing what's happening to George Floyd. And I know within every single ounce and fiber of my being, anytime I go online, that it is about to change really heavily. And I saw how it affected our professional working capacity just by stuff that was being shared on LinkedIn. So that to me is the moment that I look back on, right?
Yeah.
What do you look back on, and what are some of those strides that you are proud to say that you've taken and is made up into the leadership team at your organization when it comes to DE&I?
Oh my gosh. So I'm very passionate about, you know, DE&I, and I always feel like you can't do enough. Yeah. You know, there's always more that you can be doing. There's more you can be learning. I learn stuff every day from my leadership team. And I'm very fortunate that I have an extremely diverse leadership team. And if I were to flash you up just the picture of our executive team, I have a dual CEO reporting structure. My one CEO is a person of color. My other CEO is Latina, Hispanic. And then I have a female CFO. I'm, you know, a female chief people officer. Our client officer is also female. So heavy female leadership. We look different. We think different. And because of that, we all lead different, right? But we connect with our people. And we have done such a great job of bringing in, you know, people with different backgrounds, different thought leadership. and educating our people, you know, on what does it really mean to be inclusive? Like, we did a training not too long ago on inclusive language and how to talk, you know, with your employees, and, you know, how to use pronouns and all of these things, which again goes back to that empowering piece, right? We are empowering our leaders to talk to their people in ways that they will be receptive, you know, and be inclusive. So just remembering and always focusing on there's more to do. Like, we have goals this year to increase our representation in people of color in our mid-level managers, right? We noticed that it was not high in those areas, and we wanted to really put our recruiting efforts into those areas. So we're doing all of our recruiting events that we're going to this year are at historically Black colleges. Yeah. I mean, we're not going anywhere else, you know, and we're going to see if that works, you know, but we're constantly trying to make changes in those areas, you know?
That's great. I love this conversation that we've been having, because you really do simplify this, right? This isn't some crazy algorithm that we take a look at data subsets and try to come up with the formula. You're like, you know, quote unquote, it's in our leadership. Like, it's not neurosurgery. But I mean, and I've been on a few of these DE&I panels, and I can tell you that is the number one takeaway on not everything is it truly reflected into the leadership team that drives the organization every day?
It makes all of our minorities feel so much more seen and heard when they can look up to our leadership team and see people like them. It's as easy as that.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love that. Okay. So how has it been? You know, you've given us the experience as the CPO at Blue Acorn. I'd love to know what the experience is as the CEO of this coaching business that you have. How has that been? And then let's couple that with, what advice would you give to that hopeful, you know, hustler that's looking to get into this themselves?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. So I love, you know, being my own boss and being a hustler. It's in my DNA. It's who I am. But mostly I just love the learning of new things, right? So my business from now to next is all about executive coaching. I do HR consulting as well. You know, I do all the things. I get to help people, and that's so rewarding and so fulfilling that it doesn't feel like work, you know? So I absolutely love doing that. I have my own podcast, From Now to Next, that I just talk with women about, you know, the sticky floors that hold them back from busting through glass ceilings. And those sticky floors are imposter syndrome and perfectionism, toxic relationships, toxic behaviors. Mm-hmm. And it makes you feel less alone, you know, when you're sitting there and you're feeling like that. So it's just, it's a boss ass move, you know, and
yes, I love it.
I love it. But when I think about it, and I think about what advice I would give to someone is, I mean, there's so many, right? But I think the one thing that really sticks out to me is do it scared. You know, like, everything that I've ever done in my life, I've been new at some point. I never knew how to do personal training. I never knew how to be an HR business partner. I never knew how to be an executive, you know, and there always seems to be this piece of me, you know, this fear of judgment that just settles there. Acknowledge it. It's there, but do it anyways.
I love that. Yeah. There's so much to be said in that initial first step, the leap of faith. After all, everything else comes with it, but it really does begin and end there. And I'm really, you know, excited to hear about the podcast. Can you let the listeners know a little bit more about your podcast and how we can find some of those recordings that you guys have done?
Yeah. So it's on Apple Music, Spotify, wherever you get your music, but it's the podcast From Now to Next. Can't miss it, but that's where you can find it. You can find me on Instagram, same handle, From Now to Next, and Facebook as well. If you are open to connecting, I'm on LinkedIn. I love connecting with people on LinkedIn. I'm happy to just jump on a call and chat, because I truly believe in the power of community and the power of networking.
Absolutely. I think your career and your own personal transgression is definitely a testimony to that. It has been so much fun talking with you, Erica. I really hope that we have the opportunity to collab again soon. But listeners, you guys know where to get in touch with Erica. I'm connected with her on LinkedIn as well. She shares a lot of great content on there. Some noteworthy ones that are kind of take you down to a place where you're reflective on some of the insight that she's sharing. So I highly recommend that you guys connect with Erica on LinkedIn if you have the chance. But Erica, thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you. It was such a pleasure.
Absolutely. You know, time is one of the most valuable gifts that we can give one another. There's something about time. So we thank you for spending some time with us, Erica. We thank you for our listeners as well for tuning into today's episode. We will see you guys on the next episode of the Ivy Podcast.
Thank you for listening to the Ivy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.